For Notre Dame football fans, there's no sweeter sound than the words,
"Touchdown Notre Dame!"
or "Irish win."
He's in for a touchdown! The Irish have come from behind!
As a fan of the Fighting Irish, you know that Saturdays in the fall are not just game days. They are unforgettable experiences. Welcome to a fan's perspective on Fighting Irish football. This is Dome and Domer. Here are your hosts, Mike Brammer and Ed Jordanic.
Hello, Irish fans, and welcome to another edition of Dome and Domer. My name is Mike Brammer. Joining me tonight, Mike Coffey from NDNation.com, as we close out the Notre Dame football season of 2011. Thank you, God. I don't know where Jordanic is. He probably couldn't bring himself to close the season out. But, you know, I will say this. I went to the game. It was a great atmosphere. I mean, the place was packed. There was a buzz in the air. It was a perfect night for football. I mean, it was just
well. The numbers definitely back that up. I mean, if you look at the what bowl games are selling out, what bowl games had at least a decent percentage of their seats sold. The Champs Bowl has been mentioned on almost every list.
Yeah, and I think that they broke the record by like 10,000.
Wouldn't surprise me.
So, yeah, you know, granted, Florida State's in it. Okay, fine. But even still, I would argue it wasn't quite half the stadium, but, man, it was close of Notre Dame football fans. Probably more like a third, a little bit more than a third. But it was a very, very good showing by Notre Dame fans in the stadium. So, you know, and for most of three quarters, we had our way. So it was fun to be in that situation. As is the case with Notre Dame in 2011, three quarters of football doesn't cut it. And, you know, I guess the only other thing I'll say is I did stay in the Notre Dame hotel that was the, you know, the hotel that the players stayed at and everything. And as a result, got to bump into some players and see some things. My daughters, who are, one's a sophomore at Florida State, the other one is a senior at IU, were there and ran into some football players and had some stories for me. One of which is that I guess Manti Te'o is pretty good on the ukulele and sings pretty well. But surprisingly, I was really impressed with the way the Notre Dame football players handled themselves. The way the accessibility of them was kind of interesting. I mean, that kind of surprised me a little bit, good and bad. I mean, I'm sitting there thinking to myself, man, if I was an agent, I could easily get to some of these guys. But the fact of the matter is, I will say I was really impressed. I mean, these guys, sometimes we forget that they're 18, 19, 20, 21-year-olds. And, you know, they're kids. They love the game of football. They play it hard. It doesn't always work out like they like. And but yet, you know, they're kids. You know, they're not like you and me where we put up with this for 20 years and it's grinding on us.
Slowly but surely.
Slowly but surely. But, I would say I was really, really impressed. I mean, I have to start out by saying that. Now, let's go ahead and dig into what is wrong with this football team, but we'll at least start from there. I'll say this. I got to be honest with you. Right after the game, I was devastated. I'm like, oh, my God, here we go again. Now that we're, you know, a few days removed from it, I got to be honest. I still feel good about the football team, about our defensive line, where that defensive line is going to be next year and for the next 2 years, quite honestly. I personally think this comes down to, and it's been evident if you watch the bowl games leading up to even tonight, with West Virginia and Clemson, having a mobile quarterback is the difference. And I think had we had that, you would not be looking at an 8-5 record, let alone maybe arguably not even playing in a BCS game. But I really think that if you want to pinpoint a lot of things that went wrong, it's got to start right there. I mean, it's just night and day.
Definitely the quarterback position was the major woe. And I certainly agree that mobility at the position certainly helps, especially the way Brian Kelly calls his offense. I mean, having the defense not have to worry about the quarterback trying to do something on his own is just takes so much away from what they're trying to do. Now, having said that, though, I really believe that if you're going to play an immobile quarterback like Tommy Rees, you have to account for it. You have to alter your play calling. You have to change what you're trying to do.
Well, you know, I think you just hit it on the head, because the fact of the matter is, I think what we learned this season is ultimately that's probably not what Brian Kelly's comfortable with, nor does he seem to handle that very well. And I think that first down and seven, you know, first down, balls on the 7-yard line, we know what we've faced all season long. And on that play, he calls a quick slant it was read wrong. Yeah, he threw it to the wrong guy. But, you know, having been in that situation, you knew what you were in for 13 games into the season. Why even bother calling that play?
And what's especially frustrating is the touchdown that Michael Floyd scored should have been another interception in the end zone, where it seems invariably we get into the red zone, an area, or actually more like inside the 10, an area of the field where historically passing is just more difficult because you've got the end line and sidelines working against you, and time again, we're making play calls that are not going to our strengths. You've got first down, first and goal, or second and goal. You've got some more plays to play with. Why not? And what really boggled my mind was you have Andrew Hendricks, who has had a couple successful runs getting us down to the 7-yard line. The very next play, you take him out and you put Tommy Rees in. Is there anybody in that entire stadium that didn't know a pass was coming? And it's that kind of predictability that takes a situation where we have, God bless him, a limited quarterback, and puts even more limitations on him.
Yeah, well, it puts him under a pressure that, you know, is tough to handle and tough to do. And you know, I think both of us would be in agreement that we're not trying to knock Tommy Rees here. I think he had a heck of a season. You know, he's been a winner. He's proven that. I just think that with the offensive style that Brian Kelly likes to run, trying to do that with Tommy Rees is almost like having your hands tied behind your back. And I just think that because, you know, Brian is so dialed in to having a mobile quarterback, it's so difficult to not have that and to make calls when, you know, you're just not in a comfortable position like that. And that's why you end up doing what we did. I personally, for me, I think the success of this football team over the next two seasons, and I'm going to go out on a limb right here, is going to come down to Everett Golson. I really think that Golson, worst case scenario, will start out kind of like Hendricks did this year. We're supposed to start out, but he'll see time right away, like in the Navy game, in certain situations. I personally think he's going to start. I mean, I really honestly believe the reins are going to get turned over to him. And, you know, Brian would put himself in a situation where next year is going to be like, all right, we got to get through this with a young quarterback. But his ability to call a game with that kind of a quarterback is going to be a much better fit for Brian Kelly than trying the reverse, where he doesn't have a multiple quarterback and he's trying to call a game with that handicap. And I don't know why, but I got this gut feeling that's
where
everything's
headed.
Well,
I would agree with you, if only because it's the only result, it's the only end game that puts any kind of logic to the quarterback decisions that were made this season. You have a kid on the roster, Andrew Hendricks, who seems to understand a good amount of the offense and has the mobility that Brian Kelly's looking for, and has a stronger arm. So logic would dictate that he would play. However, if the decision has already been made in Brian Kelly's head that Golson is the starter next year, then the absolute last thing you want to do is give Hendricks a ton of reps and create a quarterback controversy next year.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I do. I don't know why. I got this gut feeling that that's what's going on.
It's your mind applying logic to the game. I mean, even within the bowl game itself, I really would love for somebody to come up with a logic to the quarterback substitution patterns. The whole thing was just maddening. And if you're going to play Andrew Hendricks, put him in a position where he can succeed. Put him in for, like, start him off on a drive and see how he does. I mean, if you're going to throw a kid in there ice cold and say, here, throw a pass, yeah, you're going to get it intercepted. That's you're almost begging for that to happen.
Yeah, and it could vary. You know, it's tough for us to sit here and make judgments because obviously we're not there at practice and so forth, and we don't see what they see on a daily basis. It was interesting because I watched the game, obviously, there in the stadium. You see a lot of things. I then come home and I watch the game on TV, and then I see other things, and then it starts to make sense to me. And I think that, you know, the interception that Hendricks threw, I mean, obviously that was a huge, huge turning point in the game. When I was watching it at the stadium, I mean, it looked like he was trying to throw it to him. Like, that's who he was intending to throw it to. When I then got back home and saw it on tape, it's obvious he was throwing behind him to the crossing route to Toma, I think, and he just didn't even see him. You know, he was locked in and he didn't see him. And I think that obviously that's the sign
Absolutely.
Of a young quarterback where when the ball snapped and you're a quarterback, your natural instinct, the good ones at least. The natural instinct is to look at the defense, to know what they're in, and then to visualize the drops of almost every defender simultaneously. So as you drop back, you're looking at the defense, and you see the drop linebacker either drop, blitz, or whatever that is, and then as you see that, that's where you know your hot route is. And obviously, you know, Hendricks isn't to that point yet. Probably, I'm arguing Tommy Rees isn't even to that point yet. But guys like Andrew Luck, I mean, when you watch them, that is exactly what they do. They just have this sense about them that they know what the defense is in. You know, granted, they know the matchups they get. Like when we had Floyd man-to-man, you know, you pretty much knew we were going to go to him, and 9 times out of 10 it worked for us. But, I think the situation next year is going to be, look, I got a very talented athlete who can make plays from a mobile, and I think Denard Robinson is the perfect example. I mean, quite honestly, I don't know about you, but he's without a doubt one of the luckiest QBs in the nation. I mean, it boggles my mind how he can repeatedly make throws that are not very good throws but end up in the hands of his receivers. And I just think that the dynamic he brings to the table, being that he's so mobile and he's such a threat, he gets away with stuff like this. I mean, it's almost like he creates the opposite effect from a passing standpoint because he's so dangerous running. Now, he got lucky, and we all saw it last night again. But I really think with Everett Golson back there and his mobility and his ability to make plays from a running standpoint, it puts a ton of pressure on the defense where they can't rush three guys like they did against us this year. You can't do that with an Everett Golson.
No, because you rush three guys, you're creating lanes for him to run in. Now, if you have a quarterback like Tommy Rees, who you know is not going to run, you can do that with impunity and drop eight guys and say, okay, fine, we know you're not going to run. Try to complete a pass with eight guys back there in a zone trying to shut you down.
That's exactly right. And the other thing is, and this is the thing that I think is just what's going to set Everett Golson apart, I really think, and this is just what I'm hearing from people at practice, he's the kind of kid that if they do rush three or even if they rush four, when he breaks the line, that first guy is going to miss him. He's going to make that guy miss more times than not. When it's an open field, one-on-one tackle, that guy's going to have trouble bringing him down. And when you do that, you're looking at scrambles of 8, 9, 10 yards, and that's huge. I mean, that is a repertoire that we did not have the entire season. And I think if you look at these bowl games, how many times do you see? I mean, how many times have you seen it tonight in the first half? you know, with West Virginia and Clemson. I mean, you know, and even Andrew Luck. I don't know if you got a chance to watch that whole game, but I think he scrambled 3 times for first downs. You know, and I guess it goes to beg, you know, all the more reason why it's even stranger to look back at the season and think, man, how did Dane Crist fall from grace so quickly?
It's a mystery.
Where that would have seemed, you know, logically that would have seemed to make the most sense. You have Crist play the whole season, Golson comes in year two and becomes your man. And then it's a mute point.
No, you'd think. And, you know, I know there are going to be people out there saying, well, it's Brian Kelly's the one to practice. He knows this, he knows that, which is fine. But more often than not, much more often than not, your average fan who is watching a team progress through the season is going to see the logic behind the moves, even if they're not at practice and aren't seeing X, Y, and Z. They're going to be in a position where they can say, okay, it's obvious, or it seems at least that the coach is trying to do this or the coach is trying to do that. As I said, unless the decision's already been made that Golson's the guy and they just decided that they didn't want to burn a year for him, it's the only thing that's the only conclusion that makes sense, because otherwise, because we're going into next season probably with an untested quarterback, unless it's Tommy Rees again, in which case then you have to wonder, you know, are Golson and Hendricks just not able to do it, which is a distressing thought in and of itself.
Yeah, I'm going to be personally shocked if Everett Golson doesn't take that first snap against Navy next year. I really will, because I think that's exactly right. What it's saying is one of two things. He's either that good of a talent at quarterback, but he just can't handle the reads and puts us at a very, very difficult situation, and therefore you have to go with Tommy Rees. And again, I think you're right. That's going to be a very disheartening realization if that's true. But secondly, I just think that I think the frustration levels with Brian Kelly, as you could see on the sidelines, especially in the game, they're at an all-time high, and it's just peaked. And it's obvious that this season was an absolute struggle
for him. Oh, no
doubt. And he knows it, and he knows that. And I think the explanations on Golson made a lot of sense. You know, I think that he was the number two guy coming out of the season, and then into around the third or fourth game they were going to get him in. But then all of a sudden he started struggling with his grades, and then you've got all that worries of, all right, wait a minute, I got a freshman here, I need to get him dialed in because he's going to have 4 more years for me after this. And then the decision's made, you know what, we can't risk this. It's way too important for him to stay hooked on the books, get himself and his feet grounded, and let him become a student that he needs to become, and then he's the man next year and we're moving ahead.
Sure.
So, you know, to me, that seems to make the most sense. And I think if that is the case, if it ends up being Everett Golson next year, this season is going to be forgotten after about the third game.
I certainly
game.
Hope so.
Because I think the missing link in this entire situation of us getting back to where we need to be as an elite program is a mobile quarterback. And it's just, it's so obvious, it's so just out there that, you know, granted there were some things wrong that went, you know, when we could sit here and analyze the game and argue about the play calling, and there were some questionable ones, and yeah, sometimes our DBs don't turn their heads when they should. But the fact of the matter is, you know, the defense held a pretty doggone good team to, you know, effectively, I mean, after that turnover deep in our territory, you know, you almost can't count that one against them. You know, even at 18 points, you can't ask for much more. From a defense in a given game. And you know, I just think that having seen this whole entire season and everything that we went through, you know, we're just that link away from this team being an elite program. And to me, it seems real obvious.
Well, hopefully we can make that jump next year. There's a lot of guys to replace. There's going to be a lot of pressure, not only on Golson, but on the young receivers and maybe the younger guys on a lot of the younger guys on the offense to really, really step up and produce.
Yeah, no, you're right, and I do think that, you know, there's some gaps there. It's not like it's all the quarterback position. I mean, obviously we lose a guy in Michael Floyd who, you know, is an absolute playmaker. You know, and there again, I mean, there's another just unbelievable stroke of bad luck. From what I gather that I heard at the hotel, he bruised his sternum on that touchdown play. So if I came home and watched it, and sure enough, I mean, he got drilled right in the center of his chest, helmet to his chest, and so what I did hear at the hotel was that he bruised his sternum, and, you know, it was getting worse on him as the night was going on. It was causing some pain. So, you know, yeah, I would have liked to had him, you know, play through that. But, you know, the fact is we didn't have him on the last two drives of the night, and that was huge. I mean, it totally played a part in everything that went wrong. So.
Okay.
But in any event, you know, that's how it is. So let's hope that next year is what we're hoping for, and that Golson ends up being the savior for us. And at least from Brian Kelly's standpoint, he's in a much more comfortable situation running the offense with a guy like him at the helm. So let's leave it at that. You've been listening to Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports from a fan's perspective. For Mike Coffey, I'm Mike Brammer. Thanks for listening.